Hello there, and welcome to the podcast. It's John Markar here, and I thought I'd just jump in with a very quick but very important message that I wanted to share with you before you delve into this episode of the Driven Chat podcast. This podcast, the Driven Chat podcast, has now come to an end. But don't worry, I'm not going to stop you from listening to this episode or from catching up with the 185 episodes that we've recorded in this format. I just wanted to let you know that if you're looking for our new episodes recorded after December 2023, then you'll need to seek out our new podcast, The Driven Podcast. You can find The Driven Podcast in all the usual podcast platforms, including, chances are, the one that you're listening to this one on right now. So please do enjoy this episode, share it with a friend by all means. But when it's done, don't forget to search for the new podcast, The Driven Podcast, and subscribe to the new format to hear the new stuff. To make life easy, head on over to the Driven website via driven.site. There you will find links through to the new podcast, including links to your preferred podcast platform. And hey, whilst you're there, why not check out everything else we do, including hand-picked automotive news stories, car and bike reviews, video features, and even more. For now, though, I'll let you enjoy this episode, and I will remind you again at the end of the episode, but for the future reference, this message is approximately 1 minute and 30 seconds long. That's 6 clicks on the 15-second skip button. Enjoy!
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Driven Chat podcast in association with Paramex Digital. You dream it, we bring it to life. Find out more at drivenchat.com.
Well, hello and welcome to this week's Driven Chat podcast, where once again we bring you a short intro. Myself here. Hello, I'm John Markar, and the voice of Andy J also here.
Hello, how are you doing?
And then after our short intro, we have a feature-length interview. Think of it as the headline act. And it's a nice one this week. It's a man called Mark Hauer, who is the founder of the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride. And chances are, whether you have any interest in motorcycles or not, you will have heard of the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride. But I'm going to put a quick caveat in here. Just in case you're listening thinking, oh no, but I'm not interested in bikes. It doesn't matter, because this is a bike and a car podcast, because Mark is not only the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride, he's also now the Distinguished Gentleman's Drive. And for somebody with a slight speech impediment, that was quite difficult to say. So yes, it's cars and bikes. And as you will hear very soon, a really lovely, genuinely brilliant bloke. It's a good listen. You're going to enjoy it.
Are you going to marry him, John? That was quite the endorsement.
If it wasn't for the fact that he was on the other side of the planet. In fact, that's a good point. This is the longest distanced podcast we've recorded. He was in Sydney, Australia, and us over here in wintry, gloomy England still. I think that's about as far away as you can get.
So I quite like the international vibe, actually, John. So he's down under. So you're right, he's the furthest away. But thinking out loud, we've also had Magnus Walker in LA.
Yeah.
And when we spoke to Shmi, he was in Dubai.
He was, yeah.
Yeah. Who else have we had abroad? I feel like we've had someone else. Doesn't matter.
We had Mike Brewer, he was in LA the first time we spoke to him, before we then did another one with him. So we just need somebody in, I think it's Wellington, New Zealand, which is the furthest you can go before you come back from where we are in England. Any guests in Wellington, New Zealand, drop us a line.
Do you know what? I think that's so specific. I think we need to go, if we have a listener in Wellington who would just come on and say hello in one of the intros.
Yeah, drop us an email. I know that we do have listeners in New Zealand. I can see it on our... podcasting hosting platform. It shows me where everyone in the world is listening. We do have New Zealand listeners. So hello, New Zealand.
Yeah, I mean, I got to say, you know, we don't sort of humble brag like some of the other pods do about where we're ranking and how many listeners we've got and so on and so forth. But, you know, we do see these things, and the Driven Chat army is really quite sizable now. So thank you to all of you that are taking the time to tune in and join us each week. I tell you, we really appreciate it, and it doesn't sound sincere, but we really do.
Oh, it's incredible. It's incredible. I'm still,
in my head, I don't know about you, Andy, but in my head, I'm still talking to maybe a couple of my mates that are listening sympathetically. So to then go into the stats each week and see tens and tens and tens and tens of thousands of people that are listening, it's a huge number now, which is just bonkers. So yeah, thank you sincerely.
I like that that's amazing. In your head, John. I love that that's in your head, because I have literally no friends. So for me, I just think it's a couple of your mates that are listening sympathetically too, because I can guarantee there's none of my friends listening, because I ain't got any.
Oh, well, if you'd like to be Andy's friend, you can apply via podcast at drivenchat.com.
Yeah, the zero applicants. It'll be as successful as our nefarious Easter Bunny getaway car bit. Which got a massive no responses.
But I mentioned that email address, and on the subject of responses, could I just say another massive thank you? Thank you to everyone that has emailed us, because we kind of every so often we plant a little seed of, here's a little subject that we might talk about. Maybe drop us an email if you've got a story that fits the bill. And of course, last week's podcast, so that was with Tom Wood of Kazana and Car and Classic, and we said at the beginning in our little intro, you know, if you've got a classic car sell story, either winner or loser, then do let us know. And we've had a few come in. Some of them are quite difficult read, and some of them are a big win. So it's awesome. So yeah, thank you. I promise you, as we've said before, I don't know if it's going to be, you know, next week, next month, or when, we will dedicate an entire episode to working through listeners' emails and questions, because we've now had quite a good selection. And yes, we'd love to do that. It'd be good fun. So
I think it'll be quite soon.
Yeah, and keep them coming.
We don't want to give out an email address and then just kind of not do anything for months. Yeah. You know, we'll get onto that. I think we might pause a celebrity guest so that we can address the people that really matter, which is the people that are actually spending time to get involved with us.
Absolutely.
In a very, very near show. That would be the right thing to do. So yeah, if you want to get involved, if you want to have a shout out or a conversation point or make a point, what was it? podcast@drivenchat.com. If you'd like to get involved.
Yeah, keep them coming. Keep them coming. It's brilliant.
Now, John, you spotted something that before we started recording, I would say it had you perplexed.
Yeah, well, so before we do these little intros, because of course, usually the format is that we'll have an interview with a guest, and sometimes that's recorded a week or two previously to this intro. And then what we like to do at the little intro is we try and get this week's news stories. You know, we find out what's happening in the automotive world, if there's anything worth talking about in current real times. And this morning, as I wiping the sleep from my eyes, I was kind of going through all the press releases of the week, and there isn't really much going on. The biggest thing that jumped out to me this week is from Bentley. We love Bentley very much, and we love their cars. We love driving them. However, they're announcing, Bentley's proud to announce plans to develop the first ever Bentley-branded luxury tower in the world, the Bentley Residences. I mean... Mm.
Where's that going to be, John?
It's in Florida, South Florida.
Because you are moving soon, so I'm wondering if this is aligned.
That would be great, wouldn't it? And it just so happens, the reason I'm talking about it is because why car manufacturers building
2 minutes
houses
after you
now?
Say you love Bentley. Yeah, and I'm also moving into Bentley Towers.
It jumped out at me this is of course coming in on a automotive, there's a big portal that all journalists and freelancers will know about called NewsPress that sends you out the week's news every single day, twice a day. Here's what's happening in the automotive world. And of course, it's usually Aston Martin have developed a new wheel that can turn twice as fast. It's, you know, a lot of the times it's quite boring.
New logo. Yeah, I mean, like the Peugeot logo was a huge thing for a while.
It was a huge thing.
Look at the lion.
Yeah. Everyone's doing new logos. That's cool. Yeah. But every so often you do get a confusing one like Bentley houses.
This is curious because Aston Martin have done the same thing a few years previous, haven't they? They've got that complex. Is it LA or is it also Florida? I can't remember. But they've got that sort of apartment block that's an Aston Martin designed apartment block. They've got submarines. They've got, I think they've got a kind of Aston helicopter type thing as well, haven't they?
Sort of flying
droney type. So yeah, I think some of these design houses just like to kind of flex their muscles a bit, but you know, more often than not, they don't become anything other than nice concepts. So to actually...
Yeah, this is happening, apparently.
What is a Bentley? What did you say it was called? Bentley Towers?
Let's have a look. Bentley branded luxury residential tower in the world. Bentley is the Bentley Residences, they're calling it.
Bentley and
it's effectively, it's a huge sky rise, think luxurious apartment block tower. I mean, it looks very posh. And of course, the irony of this is that we've started this by saying, that's ridiculous. Who would want to talk about it? And of course, we're talking about it on our podcast.
The trouble is, right? You'll say we're talking about it, and now you're looking at it, and you've actually started drooling, John. I think you've looked at pictures, and you're like, I'd like to live there too.
I don't know about Florida's okay. I don't know if that'd be my number one choice of US living.
You could go to Disney. Go to Disney often.
There is Disneyland not far away.
Basically, Disney. That's the main thing.
And some alligators.
Is Epcot also in Florida? I don't know.
Daytona's up the road. That's good. You go there.
I did a travel show there once. I can't remember anything about it. Isn't that awful?
In Florida. Mind you,
it was about 1,000 years ago. So.
But yeah, you know, it's confusing, isn't it? But fair enough. There are lots of confusing things in the car world. Here's another thing that's confusing me in the car world. I promise I'm not going to turn this into a Mark Armones episode. Have you seen, Andy, the advert that's currently on both the television and on the radio at the moment, which advises people that if they have an issue with their car on the motorway, they must go left? Are you familiar with this?
I haven't seen this. Right. No. What?
So there is an advert. I cannot even begin to imagine the amount of money that has been spent on this advertising campaign. And they use the iconic song Go West. You know, the lyrics, Go West. So they use, instead of Go West, they're saying Go Left.
How does it go?
You know it. You're just trying to make it karaoke.
Are you just making this up? Oh, yes, I am. Yeah.
But yeah, so they've come up with this advertising campaign.
I love that you
campaign.
Sung a bit more then, though.
I know. If I had more of a singing voice, it's too early in the morning when we're recording this.
I've been up for 5 hours, John. 5 hours. It's not too early. Come on.
I don't have kids. I got up 2 minutes to nine before our recording. No, that's not true. No, but so this advert, this very, very confusing advert is advising people, if you have an issue with your car on the motorway, you must go left to pull onto the hard shoulder. Now, that's fine. Like, the whole premise of the advert is fine, and I agree with the advice. My issue, and where the confusion lies, is who on earth needs to be told that? And if you are, for the first time in your life, as a driver, sitting there going, oh, right, so I pull over to the left if I have an issue. What are you doing on the road? Like, we both know how much it costs to make adverts on the television. It's not a cheap exercise.
You're looking at a staggering amount of money. Yeah.
And it's a huge campaign where people, they've got these stupid comedy fly characters that have landed on a windscreen and they're pointing, go left, because your engine lights come on. And I remember the first time I watched it, I was like, have I accidentally flicked onto like a comedy sketch show of like obvious comedy? But no, it's a real campaign, and I can't work out for the life of me why this needs to be a thing. I mean, what's the next advice?
If
a car in front of you starts to stop, brake. Obviously. Are there people? Is this a thing? Are people pulling into the overtaking lane or the central reservation to stop when they break down? Is that a thing? Is that happening? And if so, are there enough people doing that it warrants millions and millions of pounds being spent on advertising? I'm very confused.
There must have been a catalyst for this, right? There must have been a spate of people just sticking the old hazard flashes on in the fast lane or whatever.
I know
we're supposed to call it the fast lane, but we all know what I mean. You know, there must have been something. Otherwise, someone has just literally had all this lockdown time, heard the song Go West, thought, oh, I'll put a left on it. There's a campaign. How can I fit it in? Oh, I know, hard shoulder. And, you know, it might be someone... Someone at the highways agency or whatever, who's quite high ranking, or maybe it's one of their cousins or their kids or some relation who's like, oh, I just had this idea, go live, and you know, and then they've just exercised too much power on something that really didn't need doing. That's the only thing I can think
it's
of.
It's very bizarre. I appreciate as well. Again, I often allow myself to forget that we are a very international podcast. This is only really going to be relevant for our UK listeners. If you're listening from elsewhere in the world, just go into YouTube and put in the Go Left campaign or whatever. I couldn't even tell you what it's called.
Well, and also if you are listening, you know, in say France or America.
Yeah, for goodness sake, don't go left.
Don't do that.
Go right. Christ. Yeah. Yeah, sorry, I didn't intend for that to be such a long tangent, but it's really annoyed me.
I think we need to have another Marco moment. I've forgotten how entertaining it is when you've gotten a grumbly. And that's just the most kind of delicate little thing. An advert has frustrated you to this level.
It has.
It's just an advert.
Because I can't help but think, I'm doing all the sums in my head of like, right, they've licensed that song. They've paid about four or five actors there. They've clearly closed a stretch of motorway to film that. Then there's the actual advertising cost. It's going to be millions of pounds.
Oh, yeah.
It's just, it's bizarre. And yeah, but and then the big thing is anyone that needs to be told that in an advert, oh my God, get off the road. Like, just stop. Stop driving. You're a risk to us all.
Okay, anyway. Come on. You've started it, John.
Yeah.
The people that need to hear that advert. Let's see this through.
Yes.
What three cars are they driving? What three vehicles?
Vauxhall Mokka, a Nissan Juke, and any Peugeot beyond 2003.
Ooh.
There we go. But
Sting.
Up to... Wow. Sorry, Peugeot drivers. No, I'm sticking with it. Yeah. Nissan Juke, Vauxhall Mokka. Or that other one, Vauxhall Grandland. What the hell's that? Grandad. It literally looks like Grandad on the logo. Yeah, Nissan Juke, Vauxhall Mokka / Grandad, or a Peugeot.
I like the new Peugeot badge for what it's worth.
Do you?
I like it. Yeah.
I see what they're doing. It's a big old PR campaign. I wouldn't want to be in charge of trying to sex up the brand Peugeot.
Well, do you know what? My thinking behind it is they've done that, the fancy new logo, because I reckon, you know, these things are planned. It's not just a spur of the moment thing like your Go Left campaign. These things are planned a long time in advance. And my hunch is that they've rebranded because there's going to be some very cool new machinery coming out.
Well, there is. They've been bought out, haven't they, by, oh God, I've forgotten the name of it. It's a really bizarre name, like Stratovarius or something. I'll put it in the blurb. Somebody's bought Citroën, Peugeot, Renault. Yeah. They bought everything. And they've decided, out of all the brands, the one that they're going to make the cool, exciting, sporty brand is Peugeot. But I have to say,
hey, listen, don't rule it out. I can see them doing it.
The modern design language for Peugeot, as Alex Goy said in a podcast with us a few weeks ago, is actually very cool. But I have to say, modern Peugeots do look quite cool. But there is that very distinct period of time, late 90s to about 2 years ago, where it was just disgusting. And it seemed that everyone that drove a Peugeot seemed to be of a...
You've got to let it re-be. You've got to allow them to be reborn, though, John. I mean, look at some of the things we've seen changing. You know, Skoda, for example. Remember the reputation they used to have?
Yeah, true.
And yet, they're kind of the way they refine themselves. Volvo. You know, they transformed themselves into becoming a super cool premium brand.
Yeah.
With a few clever tweaks. So wait and see how it goes, man. I'm defending the Peugeot because basically someone needs to.
That's fair. I'll sit with you on that. I'll have a go with the Peugeot. Just bring back the hot hatches. Peugeot of the 1980s and the early 90s. Do that again. That was brilliant.
Yes, agreed. Agreed. there was a lady on the road I grew up who had a convertible. And it just sat in the driveway, and it would be a daily routine for her to push the button and you'd see it. It was one of the first self-converting roofs, do you know? And I did sort of think to myself, yeah, that's quite cool, to be fair. That looks quite cool.
Convertible Peugeot. Didn't have you down as that type of driver, Andy.
It's not my car, John.
No,
it was a lady on the road.
No, you seem to love it very much. Good for you. Good for you.
Ah. Yeah, all right.
Right, well, we've done a little rant. We have got a ranty episode, just in case anyone's listening to this as a new listener and thinking, oh, that was quite entertaining. We did a whole episode, I can't think when it was. It was ages ago, like episode 4 or 5, where I just moan basically for an hour about everything.
The Markar Moans episode. Yeah, I think we should do another Markar.
We'll do that. We'll start compiling a list. And I think I even said in that podcast, but long before our email address became a thing, if you have things that you really hate, like what is it that really grinds your gears, pun slightly intended, about the automotive world, whether that's driving on the road, car manufacturers, in-car entertainment. I mean, I could rant about in-car entertainment for hours. All those little gripes and niggles, the kind of things that you moan to your mates at in the pub, write them down on an email. The funnier, the better. And send them over, because again, we'll dedicate an episode to going through the variants of categories that we've gone through in the past few episodes, where we talk about certain talking.
Well, look, let's do that, John. Let's do that. If we get 10 good Mark Armone style emails in the next few days, then we'll make next week's pod dedicated to the emails.
Love
the ones that we've already got, that people have already written in, and we'll have a Moni section.
Yes.
Which would be Mark R and the email listeners.
I love it.
Have a Moni.
I know for a fact that everyone has a complaint about something in the automotive world. And it's often a very funny talking topic. So yeah, the funnier the better. But if it's
if we get 10 in the next few days,
yeah,
that would be. But by the end of this week, as you listen to this,
yeah,
if you have emailed us a really good moan and there's 9 other people that have done the same, then next week's show, we won't put out the celeb that we've got. We will put out our reactions to your moany emails. You can do it via podcast@drivenchat.com. Is that right?
That's it. You got it. Well, we should probably
get your moans in.
We should probably dive into Mark Hauer. How long have we been in this intro? Gosh.
20 minutes.
20
John.
Minutes.
Far too long. Far too long. Might want to cut it all out. And we haven't even mentioned that Amy's in the show as well. People are always wondering, is Amy in the show? She's most of the interview.
Well, she is, in fact. Yeah, so Amy leads this one. It's Amy's guest. Amy, as you will discover in the podcast, there's a very valid reason for having Mark on the show. Let's stop jabbering and introduce you to the much-anticipated voice of Amy Shaw.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The Driven Chat podcast in association with Paramex Digital.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Driven Chat podcast. I am very, very excited to have on the show today a friend of mine that has created a global marvel of an event. The Distinguished Gentleman's Ride started in 2012 and since then has raised over £20,300,000, which is staggering. Can I please introduce the very wonderful, on the other side of the world, Mark Hauer.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for having me, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for spending the time to come and chat to us what is our morning, your evening. You have a very interesting office space that I can see behind you.
Yeah, there's a fair few cars here. I mean, obviously a fair few motorbikes as well. But obviously I know this is a podcast and people can't visually see me looking over my shoulder. But
it's okay. Theatre of the mind. We'll paint it all out for them.
There is a DeLorean there. There is a Z4M, one of the last six-cylinder straight naturally aspirated BMWs. There's the first ever Mazda Rotary, Mazda Cosmo. There is a Mazda Rotary at the top, which is a Mazda R130. It's pretty much the two worst things you can do to a car, a front-wheel drive, and then it's also rotary.
Yeah.
And then there's the piston equivalent of it, which is a Mazda 1800. And then, as you can see, just a hell of a lot of motorbikes and a few office desks.
I like that of your office, the office desks are kind of low on the requirements for an office space like that.
Yeah, it's how minimal desks can we squeeze in and how tightly can we squeeze it in to try and cater for more bikes and cars.
I guess as long as you're not pushing any office chairs into the side of a DeLorean or anything, then it's fine, isn't it?
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, no magnets on it either.
I mean, the DeLorean...
It basically looks like our fridge.
It is pretty low. So, I mean, if you open, like, if you open the door and had a wheelie chair, you could probably get, like, your laptop on top of the roof of the DeLorean, and that would be a pretty good desk height.
Yeah, the problem is, and it's so funny, when we have to get into it to move, because it's on the bottom, right? When we have to get into it to move, one of the guys has to literally put his hand there as a bit of a guide, because obviously they're gull-wing doors, and the last thing you want to do is damage that beautiful stainless steel. So it is very awkward seeing a 108-kilogram, 6-foot-1 man trying to squeeze into a small gap to get into the DeLorean to take it out. It's even worse when the door jams and I have to try and exit through the passenger side. That is a very awkward sight to see.
But I thought DeLoreans were perfect in every way and they never went wrong ever.
Yeah, no, you definitely didn't watch the documentary.
Oh, it's about. So, I mean, it's wonderful to have you on. And let's go straight into it. The Distinguished Gentleman's Ride. This year is being held on May the 23rd. If nobody's got them in the diaries already. I'm making sure now. I want to make sure that is right. It is May 23rd, isn't it?
Spot on, you are correct.
And the aim of the Distinguished Gentleman Ride, the DGR, is to raise funds and awareness for men's health, mental health, and some physical health. And just, yeah, tell me a bit more about how that started in 2012.
Yeah, it's been a crazy 10-year journey. So 2012, one of our Facebook groups, it was quite funny. We had this following because I started up a group called Sydney Cafe Races, and it was just about purely getting people together and riding, you know, cafe races and classic styled motorbikes. And I ended up growing that to Perth, Melbourne, and a fair few different cities around Australia. And one of the groups put a picture up of Don Draper in a suit, and I've looked at it and I've gone, oh, wow, that's cool. And the conversation started to happen around, you know, let's do a suit ride. And I've gone, guys, you know, I've got an idea. Just give me a few weeks. And started working on the name, the logo, and how to take the idea globally. And initially, the fun part about it was, how do we break these negative stereotypes that are happening in Australia, but also happening in a lot of the key countries around the world, like America, the UK, where people tend to look at motorcyclists like they're, I guess, a little bit more of a daredevil. They're, you know, they could be what people call a one percenter. People call them bikies instead of bikers. And so the idea was, let's replicate that. Let's jump in a suit. You know, the ladies can put their dresses on or a suit on, and let's jump on our classic motorbikes and go through a ride through each main street of each city around the world. And, you know, I was very fortunate in the first year that 64 people, I guess, sat there and said, Mark, we're in. And they were just mates that, you know, we'd made through the motorcycle scene, the guys from El Solitario, Blitz Motorcycles, and just people that were really passionate about riding these styles of motorcycles. And wow, 64 cities, 2,500 riders in the first year. And it continued to grow, and we started partnering up with prostate cancer foundations globally. And then eventually we partnered up with Movember, I guess because, one, I've been a Mo bro, which is what we're called when we grow moustaches, for about 13 years, I think since the second year of the event. It just continued to connect with people, because they're passionate about motorcycles, but two, because they're passionate about helping others.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. So what's funny is that the DGR 2014 was my very first photo shoot of motorcycles. I'd never...
Really?
Yeah, so I'd only been a photographer for about, like, you know, proper photographer for about 6-8 months at that point. And then Petrolicious said, hey, there's this really cool event we want covering called the DGR. Can you go to the London one and just photograph that? And I was like, cool, yeah, all right then. Don't really know what this is about. Went down, and at the time it was in Borough Market in London. And, you know, it was Dutch and Vicky from the bike shed that were kind of organising it. And when I got there, I thought, whoa, these people are way cooler than me. Like, it was the first time I'd ever experienced bike world, like, you know, actual, some form of culture of motorcycles. So that, the DGR is something I've loved from, I suppose, quite early on. And it was so such a special thing for me then each year to end up photographing it. I ended up photographing the London one about two or three times more after that, but I still didn't ride. And it was going to that event that I made me think, you know what, I'd love to actually end up riding. So then what's funny is that I think it was the 2016 one. It was over the same weekend that I was learning to ride. I was having my lessons. I had my test like the following Monday or Tuesday after the Sunday ride. So I had spent, I think it was about 7 hours doing 60 miles of like super twiddly town riding or something like that over the Sunday, rode back, you know, got back home, and then got onto my little 1972 Honda 350 with my dad riding, me pillioning with like my camera gear and all of our, you know, our cool clothing and overnight stay. And we ended up riding down to London from like the Midlands. So it was like a two and a half hour ride or something like that. Pitch black, quite cold. And it was just like, I just thought, I am so tired right now. But it was to go to that event. So that was, for me, was a really special point, being able to have my dad riding my motorcycle with me sat backwards on that bike of the 2016 ride, photographing the event in London. And it was the following year that I was the first year that I got to join in the DGR myself and on that same bike. And so for me, this event has been something that's, I've followed it through. It's probably the reason why I started riding motorcycles. And yes, it was a really special event to me. And it's wonderful that even over COVID last year, you still managed to get together some people to kind of do it in their own cities. Nothing like you're doing this year. You've got it set up that at the minute, everyone's going to be solo riding, depending on what happens with the government guidelines of each country. If our governments can say, yep, okay, you can start meeting up for outside things, then great, we'll go and meet up with groups of our friends. And just that idea of the community, even if you're together in the same city or worldwide, it's all kind of stemmed from this motorcycle event, which is really, really awesome. So, I mean, it's awesome. It's the first time I've learned that you thought about it being a global event from day one. I always thought it was something that was going to start off like in Sydney, and then somehow it grew. So that was really interesting for me to hear. Because now, how many countries? I haven't got it written down in front of me. How many countries is it now?
Pre-COVID, it was 102 countries. So our last non-COVID event was 702 cities, 102 countries, and 120 or 125,000 riders.
That's incredible.
But to unpack what you're talking about before, I remember the 2014 photos, and we still use those photos that you took in 2014. Because I remember just being absolutely blown away by some of those early morning shots at Borough Markets. And the first time that I went to London, I had been to London before, but since riding motorbikes, because I've only been riding motorbikes since 2010, 2011,
oh, really?
I sort of went out of my way to go to Borough Markets because I wanted to check out the space because it looked so awesome in those photos that you took. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah, I definitely know that you've been a part of this since 2014, and we've always appreciated your support on that one. And learning that this is the reason why, you know, we're getting more people into motorcycling. And I mean, I'd hate to go down this path, but I'm going to, but more females into motorcycling, mm-hmm. It's pretty special.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because I'm always fascinated to learn how people discover or learn about certain events. You think of these big iconic events that happen all over the world, whether that's a motorsport event like Goodwood Revival or Pebble Beach Concours in California. I'm always fascinated to see, like, how did you find out about that? How did you learn about it? And like, hearing your story about going along to Borough Market, that being your first ever meet on the bike. The interesting thing for me, the way that I found out about Distinguished Gentleman's Ride, was for a couple of years, I would see a parade of bikes go down Tooley Street in London, which is just down the road from Borough Market. My dad has an apartment on Tooley Street, and it would just so happen that I'd be there at a weekend or something going to visit, and we'd walk outside of his apartment, and there'd be this unreal noise and sight of just bikes going along with people really well dressed, and me and my dad look at each other going, what the hell's going on? Like, what is this? And of course, we then researched it, looked into it. Oh, okay, it's a Distinguished Gentleman's Ride, it all makes sense. But it's now become one of those events where people like me and my dad standing at the side of the road going, what the hell's that? Through to people who just look at photos on Instagram or have a rough interest in bikes. Almost everyone in the world now knows about this event. They've learnt of it somehow, one way or another. And it must be quite a bizarre feeling for you, Mark. I mean, I, like you, I'm from the events world. That's my trade, so to speak. And it's always quite cool when you hear people talking about something that you've organized or that you've run.
It's a totally bizarre feeling. And funnily enough, I've got an example from yesterday where one of the guys from Movable Ink, which is one of the sort of platforms we use for our emails to our database, he was really keen on coming into the office and one, checking out the space. And, you know, he'd been in lockdown wherever he was for COVID and he was just happy to be out. And he goes, "Oh, yeah, I was talking to the Uber driver and I mentioned it and they knew exactly what the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride is." And I'm sort of sitting there going, like, to me, like, it's still such a niche within a niche, right? Because it's classic motorcycles. It's a specific style of motorcycle.
Yeah.
It's not open to absolutely everyone. So it is mind-blowing. And, you know, you do sort of have to tug at your own shirt sometimes and go, "Well, did that just actually happen?" Like, I remember I was in Japan 6 years ago. And, you know, tattoos are totally taboo in Japan. But I see a guy and he's got a Distinguished Gentleman's Ride logo on his forearm.
No way.
And I go up and speak to him and I'm like, I'm curious to know if that tattoo was off the shelf somewhere or if he was a part of the event. And he was a part of the event in Milan. And that was mind blowing. And then 2 years ago, I'm at a wedding in Santorini and a guy walks past me in the hotel bistro for breakfast and he's got a Distinguished Gentleman's Ride tattoo on his arm. And I'm just sitting there going, wow, this is, I mean, for a guy that's always appreciated tattoos but doesn't have any, there are a lot of people out there that have tattoos. And to me, it's that's an awkward feeling because, you know, I think I want to change the logo. No, I'm joking. I'm joking. But it is an awkward feeling knowing that, and it's a special feeling knowing that people are so passionate about what we've done and knowing that we've been able to bring, you know, a lot of people and to be honest, a lot of lonely people together that have been able to create these friendship networks from being a part of that one day event.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's incredible. So let's just for my own kind of knowledge, and there'll be a few people at home that may be listening and wondering the same thing. What are the ground rules for the DGR? You mentioned that it's open to certain types of bikes. Is there an age cap or a style of bike cap? What's the general overview? If somebody's sitting at home thinking, this is something I feel like I want to explore or perhaps be part of, how does it all work?
Yeah, I mean, obviously age is irrelevant and gender is irrelevant, religion and all the rest of it's irrelevant. You do need to obviously be able to ride a motorcycle illegally. It is an event that takes place on public roads. From day one, it was always about limiting the size of the event. And you know, I've always had pretty good foresight and always had confidence that this was going to turn into something that was a little bit bigger than it started off as. And the first couple of years sort of dictated that, you know, we knew it was going to get to certain points where we'd have to actually put a cap on how many people can attend the event based on not wanting to cause too much traffic congestion, police and you know, local councils and other authorities. So the start of the ride is really about bringing together classic styled outfits and classic styled motorcycles. And although we've gotten a little bit lenient over the years by including the modern classic style of things, it still very much is a throwback at those, you know, the 1930s, the 1940s, the 1950s and 60s. So it's a bit, people like to dispute it, I guess. Yeah, it's a safe way to put it. But realistically, it still is an event that really at the fundamental of it, it is about cafe races and classic styled motorcycles coming together and doing their part for men globally, irrespective of whether or not they ride a motorbike, irrespective of whether or not they ride a cafe racer.
Yeah.
So that's the only ground rules. The ground rules is essentially, to answer the question simply, the ground rules is there's a style guide that's associated with the event.
Cool.
And the motorcycles have to fit in with that style guide. Are we sometimes lenient? Yes. If the person that's on an inappropriate motorcycle wants to volunteer and help corner mark or help be the first aid person or help set up, we definitely do make some exceptions for people that are just super passionate about helping others.
Nice.
That's awesome. So after the event and you've raised this amazing money, where does that end up going and how does that end up supporting all these men around the world?
So the fantastic thing about the whole structure of what we do is every single donation goes directly to Movember from our website. Yes, let's be realistic. At the end of the day, a charity event still operates as a business. We've still got staff to pay and we've still got insurance policies to pay for. But we're super proud of the fact that we operate at 20 cents in a dollar. So literally we'll be reimbursed 20 cents in a dollar for everything that we raise. And that covers the costs of us producing the entire event globally. It covers the cost of us protecting every single volunteer ride host globally and their sort of support networks as well, which you can imagine an insurance policy on that scale isn't a few dollars. It's quite expensive. And the fantastic thing is the relationship that we've got with Movember. From day one, the rule has always been, and the contract's always been, that we get to allocate where those funds go within their organisation. So we get together at the end of the event and start looking at all the different potential research programs, concepts, and really start to map out what we want to fund. And, you know, we've been very fortunate after sort of a five-year relationship with them that we were able to create a program that was based on how do we get motorcyclists to connect better for their mental health, and how do we slow down the rate of suicide. So there's actually a huge amount of programs that we've funded specifically in the motorcycle world on top of all the general research stuff that we've done. And a great link for that one is just to drive people to the website, because there is a huge amount of information and it's very transparent in the programs that we fund. And so I'm going to give the website a bit of a plug.
Go for it.
If you want to learn more about what we fund, please just head to gentlemansride.com or just Google Gentleman's Ride. Just don't click images or else you'll be scrolling down for a while until you actually remember that you were trying to find it.
No, that's awesome. Thank you so much for getting through that. And just talking about images, I'm going to go to an image now which has been burnt in my mind, and I want to just have you explain it, that. There's an image of you. You know which image I'm talking about now.
Oh, I know. You're not going to talk about a Twitter profile picture or something, are you?
I'm just confused at how it became a thing. So there's a picture of you lying as if you're on a beach.
Oh, that. Sorry, I was scared for a second. No. I thought you found a different picture.
But you're literally on what is it? An aeroplane, a massive aeroplane, about like you're about to jump out the back of it.
Yeah, that was on one of the defense planes. Yeah, so that was quite funny actually. So I guess I got to go back to this story, and I hope this doesn't affect my future possible relationship. But anyway, there was this place called Dutton Garage in Melbourne, and it's a fantastic place that sells these beautiful classic cars and performance cars. And I got kicked out of there because I had done that pose where I laid down next to a car and took a photo with it. And I got kicked out of there, and, you know, I sort of on social media, I shared that picture and shared that I'd been kicked out. And then all my friends started doing the exact same pose. And everyone tried to one up everyone on how they do this pose. And, you know, if they're in the Himalayas, like whereabouts they were in the world. And it just became this really awkward, funny competition. And then I would sort of give them a bit of a rating out of 10 and say, oh, yep, your toe's not pointing in the right direction. Your knee needs to be at this angle. And it was all just a little bit of fun. And then we were really fortunate. The head of the Australian Defence Force is a motorcyclist and was super passionate about Distinguished Gentleman's Ride. And we were able to take some of our key volunteers and our staff. And this was unbeknown to me. It was actually a surprise. And they took us up in one of the, I can't even remember what the actual plane was called, but one of our key sort of cargo slash the plane that the guys jump out of with parachutes on and all the rest of it. And I was strapped in and they lowered the back deck and I looked at the soldier to the left of me and I've gone, hey, do you mind if I just drop down for a bit of a pose? And we had our cameraman with us. And he looks at me and he says, no, you're not allowed to do that. And unfortunately, I am a bit of a rebel when it comes to that. And I noticed that we were over the Harbour Bridge and Opera House and I literally just dropped down and did the pose. And what you don't see afterwards is him grabbing me by the scruff of my neck and telling me off. And then there were some words afterwards about how we shouldn't be sharing that photo, but I mean, yeah, you can't really quite tell what it is. And a lot of people thought it was a fake photo, and people started photoshopping the background of it. So there was one where I was under the water with a little mermaid. There was one where there was the X-wing fighter and I was in Star Wars, and it just turned into this thing and it hasn't stopped and it's been like 6 years now.
But that's great because at the same time, it's still bringing people back to you and then about what you do. So really, it's all for a good cause.
Yeah, it's again, it's super awkward. And I mean, I've mentioned this to other people, but it's always super awkward because, you know, there's essentially two personalities within me. There's the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride and there's me personally. And sometimes those personalities are conflicting.
that's awesome though. So going on to the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride, Drive. This is a fairly new event, right?
Yeah, so I mean, and I do that all the time, by the way, especially when I'm talking to people. I'm like, yeah, we know about the ride. I'm like, oh, no, sorry. I mean, we're talking about the drive. So I've been a car enthusiast for a lot longer than I've been a motorcycle rider. And the idea was always there, even from, I won't say day one, but I'll say year three, to roll out into the Distinguished Gentleman's Drive. But, you know, the ride takes so much time up for us, you know, overlooking 700 rides globally. There's a huge amount of time. And these guys in the office and you know, they all work so hard. So being able to, I guess, get to the point where we've got systems and strategies and how to roll the event for the ride has made it a lot easier and freed up some of our time. So we've decided, yes, well, actually, we decided last year now is the time to roll out the Distinguished Gentleman's Drive. And it was going to happen in May last year. And COVID that.
Yep.
So we postponed it. And there's been some big changes where, you know, the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride now takes place in May. Mm-hmm. It normally takes place in September. You know, we wanted the Northern Hemisphere to be able to enjoy good weather like we have for the last 10 years. And the great thing is it now opens up the September date to be able to operate the Distinguished Gentleman's Drive. So, you know, it is sort of similar in regards to the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride in the fact that we're raising money. It's peer-to-peer fundraising. It's raising money for Movember. Primarily 50% of that goes towards suicide prevention and 50% of that goes towards the prostate cancer research side of stuff. But it's different in the fact that there's four wheels involved and it's locked into pre-1980s cars. So,
nice.
You know, we're talking super classic, very different in regards also to the fact that the ride takes place through the main streets of the city. This is more of a, hey guys, this is not a cars and coffee. Yes, we're going to have a meeting spot, but we're actually going to go for a drive and we're actually going to cover a couple hundred kilometers and we're going to raise a hell of a lot of money to support Movember.
That's really cool. So obviously it got cancelled last year. What, for people listening, what date is it going to be this year?
That's a really good question. And I feel like I'm going to make a mistake here and you guys may be able to edit it. And I'm also going to do this sideways eye to one of my staff members just to get confirmation. And I'm going to say that it's September the 26th. And he doesn't even know.
That's okay.
I'm fairly confident. If it's a Sunday and it's the last Sunday of September, right, which I think is the 26th, it is September 26th.
September 26th. It's in my calendar. It's Distinguished Gentleman's Drive.
Okay. And the awesome part about that is we've pretty much already locked in over 150 drives globally.
Wow. Oh, incredible.
And so it's pretty exciting. And you know, our network has obviously been growing since we announced it. And we've been getting a bit more involved in the Australian classic car scene as well. And we actually did a bit of a dummy drive. I can't call it a dummy drive. It sounds inappropriate. A dummy run at a car event called the Sydney Harbour Concourse. And we had 25 drivers that joined us. And we did a little drive through Sydney and finished up at this fantastic sort of beach location. And then ended up at the actual location of the event and we got to drive in and park in the driveway and it formed part of the actual concourse as well. And everyone was just buzzing. And I think everyone was buzzing because it was so cool to sort of be able to bring a different point to that event where you had younger people, you had ladies driving, you had guys driving, they were all suited, you know, they were wearing their Sunday best. And there were cars that essentially weren't concourse because, you know, it's pre-80s. You can have your sort of rusty survivors. You can have your patina. You can have your slightly modified cars. It was just cool bringing that. And I think it sort of showed to the 25 drivers and myself and the team here that, you know, we're fairly confident it's going to be a successful event.
So I need to think about what I'm going to actually drive because my Mini is 1985, so I've now got to have a either find something.
Or what we do is we just have some slight provisions that say run on models like the Mini. The thing is, I mean, if it looks exactly like a 1979 model, I mean, there will be provisions to allow that. We're not going to be super, super, super strict, but maybe we'll have some additional spots for people that are super passionate, and they can be the tail end Charlie, or they can be the guys that carry the jack for us and the battery pack for when we break down.
Well, I mean, in May next, so yeah, next month is I turn 30, and I know that my boyfriend has been looking, and he's been saying he's looking at parts, and these parts just happen to, you know, if I go onto his phone for something, I'm like, oh, there's a nice MGB GT on your page there, and he's like, just parts, Bab, and then just kind of moving on. So then, so I think I might end up going on the Distinguished Gentleman's Drive in probably something pre-80s anyway, but something I don't yet know what it's going to be. So,
God, it's going to be really awesome. Bloody awkward if it turns out he's not getting you an MGB.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, it was literally just a poster that he wanted.
he sat at home listening to this going, what the hell? Now I've got to buy an MG.
Well, maybe this is a good like kick for him. If he can listen to this, I'll be like, can I have it in yellow, please? I mean, if some parts are being
You're doing that thing where girls really, really want their partners to propose and just talking about weddings constantly.
Like, yeah, just talk about cars instead.
Yeah, the only thing on his phone every time I picked it up was a ring.
Like, what is with that?
But it looked like it was a part of a piston, but I'm just going to think that it was something different.
But what's funny is that he doesn't ride. So now he's like, I'm not going in the back with you. I'm like, come on, just come on. Just.
You have to make that happen. So our friend Hannah, her partner is Magnus Walker, which you guys would be familiar with.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was our ambassador a couple of years ago. And the best part about that is that she had a sidecar that she was riding, and Magnus was sitting in there in the sidecar, having the time of his life. And you know what? There was enough space in that sidecar that he could put his beard dreadlocks, his head dreadlocks, his chest dreadlocks, and everything else. And he's a good friend of ours as well, and he's helping to organise one of the rides in the States.
Amazing!
I think I'll do another shameless plug here. But if there is anyone that's listening that's into their classic sort of cars, I was about to say motorbikes, damn it, that's into their classic cars, then the website for that is just gentlemansdrive.com. And you know, if anyone wants to host a drive, then that's where they can get in touch with us. And if anyone just wants to put their name down so we can keep them informed, that's brilliant. The place to go.
Love it.
I'm full of plugs to my own events.
Very very subtle plugs though.
So it's
yeah, we should do a plug to like just some random business in the middle of nowhere, just to make sure that this isn't biased. So yeah. If you need fly screens, please head to.
So I'm going to jump in on the getting mixed up between cars and bikes and cars, because you mentioned you were primarily a driver, car driver, then turned motorcyclist. And I think that's a fairly common theme for a lot of bikers now. They tend to start out with cars and classic cars. Me personally, I drove cars for the best part of 10 or 11 years with zero interest in bikes. Literally, you couldn't pay me to even consider riding a bike. And then one day a little light bulb turned on and it was, I want to learn how to ride bikes. And now I love it. What was the transformation for you? How did it go from cars to bikes? And was there a... like me, where you were kind of a bit like not that fussed by them, or is it something you'd always really wanted to do, or how did it pan out?
Yeah, it was you probably hit the nail on the head. For me, it was just a light bulb moment. Mm. I literally woke up, I was, how old am I now? I'm 36 now, I was 25. Woke up in bed and just thought, you know what, I want to go get my motorbike license. Mm-hmm. And that was it. There were no external influences. I'd never looked at motorbikes before going, oh yeah, that's cool, I want to do that. I feel like it was quite a unique light bulb moment, because everyone I speak to, they've either come from a family or their cousin has ridden a motorbike, mm-hmm. or someone has introduced them to it. Out of my friendship network, you know, I've still got 25 really close mates from high school. None of them are interested in motorbikes at all. Mm. And that sort of is where I got my motorcycle license, you know, did the course, was riding a motorbike. I ended up going to Japan for 4 weeks on holidays, and I fell in love with the custom motorcycle culture in Japan. And I saw these Yamaha SR400s and every single one of them was customized differently. And I just sat there and gone, this is f-ing cool. Like the fact that it's an extension of their personality was amazing. And then I came back to Sydney and I bought an SR500, customized it and, you know, started riding it around and thought I was so cool. And then I was like, wow, I'm really lonely. I've got no one to ride motorbikes with. And that's when I started Sydney Cafe Races as, you know, being the way of being able to bring people together so that I didn't have to ride by myself. So it was really unique. And I mean, even when I was younger, like I said before, I'm a big guy and I've always been a big guy, but I love small cars. And like when I was 17, it was multiple Suzuki Mighty Boys, Suzuki Caravans. Like one of the cars that I own now is a Lotus Europa. And I bought that while I was in hospital in Endone with a broken leg. And I even squeezed into it with a broken leg and had to commando crawl out of it. It's funny. It's just funny when it comes to cars, the fact that I'm turned on by the quirkiness of cars that aren't super popular.
Yeah, no, I get that 100%. There's something very special about driving a car that you hardly ever see any others of. I think it can be very easy to go and get the, you know, tick the box of 911. Yeah, that's cool. Or even things like M3s, M5s. Classic Mercs, you know, it can be very easy to go, oh, that's a car I've always wanted to have. But then the minute you turn up to a car show and there's 13 others of them, and you go, oh. But when you can rock up in a car that nobody else is in, you're kind of like, ha, look at me.
Yeah. and it was really funny, the transition. No, I can't say the transition because obviously I'm still totally addicted to cars. But going from cars to motorcycles, I remember I got my dad to drop me off at Sydney Airport and I flew up to Brisbane. It's only an hour and a bit up north, but it's about 800 kilometers. And I bought my first ever Mazda 1800, which literally is a replica of the one that's in the background. And I got to the airport. The guy picked me up from the airport. He didn't ask any questions. I went and checked out the car and he wanted $2,000 for it. And I had $2,000 cash in my pocket. And I looked at him and I've gone, before I hand this over, is this car going to make it back? And he looks at me and he goes, I forgot to ask you, where did you fly from? And I've gone, from Sydney. And he looks at me and he goes, no chance.
Oh no.
And I've gone, and I've just looked at him and I'm just like, oh no. And I've looked at him, I've gone, you know what? It's not as if I've got no plans on taking an airplane back. I gave him the money and I hit the road and I literally made it back home 9 hours later. Wow. I stopped for a cheeseburger. Didn't even really stop. I went through drive-thru. I filled up petrol once and then I got home and my eyes were just red and I had the most amazing drive of my life. It was, the air conditioning. By air conditioning, I mean the 3-quarter windows at the front. It was the best feeling. And I get home and my dad just looks at me and he just goes, and then he looks at his watch and he goes, I do not know how you just did that. And it definitely wasn't legally, but it was such a fun drive. And the hard part is sort of then getting more into the motorcycle side of stuff. There is more opportunity for that adrenaline on motorcycles because, you know, you're so much more at risk, right? You've got no sort of protection around you. And it's really funny now because, I mean, if I go into a car that's classic but possibly more on the boring side of classic, you know, I can get about 3 or 4 hours straight driving and I'm pulling over for a bit of a nap. If I go into my daily car, it is 2 hours and I'm going for a nap, whereas that never used to happen when I didn't own a motorcycle.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think that's the one thing that people say to me about like riding bikes and stuff. They're like, you know, aren't you just worried that you're just going to kill yourself or anything? And I'm like, no, because you're so scared all the time that when you're riding, like suddenly, like, right. I remember one of the first times I was on the back of a motorcycle, I was with my brother. So my brother had just learned how to ride. So literally, I don't think it was probably not legal at the time because I don't think he would have been insured. He passed his test rode back home on his little 125, took his L plates off. He's like, Amy, do you want to go out for a ride? I'm like, yeah, go on then. Because I'd just been dumped. So I was like really sad. So he took me for, he's my younger brother as well. So it's quite sweet. So we went and got like takeaway. We went to Pizza Hut and got pizza and then like sellotaped it to his tank to then ride at home. And also the same, what was also funny, this is a really not stupid thing, but it's quite funny at the time. I had just had an operation on my hand. So my hand was in this massive, like, bandage. I mean, like, rugby ball-sized bandage and, like, plaster. And so I couldn't get it through this motorcycle jacket. So I've got it, like, zipped up inside my jacket against my chest, one arm around my brother. There's no rear foot pegs, so I've got my feet resting on whatever I was on. I went to go and get pizza. And then, I mean, I started this story saying, you know, you're not scared about anything. But, I mean, it's on that ride where I thought, suddenly, the curbs, I thought, curbs suddenly look very sharp and my kneecaps feel very vulnerable all of a sudden. And I think it is a level of being slightly scared for me all the time, which is both exhilarating and also keeps me safe. Like, I do not understand the mentality of bike riders, which I think are completely different to, say, I don't know about you, Mark, but for me, for a start, like the idea of going 100 on the motorway weaving between traffic just makes me, I can't even begin to think about that. I'm just like, no. Like, I saw literally a group of about 3 or 4 riders the other day doing the exact thing on their super bikes and like their girlfriends on the back, like, you know, high up on the rear seat, yeah, like in leggings or something like that. Oh, and I'm just like, what on earth are you doing? No wonder people think that, you know, bikers are, you know, crazy or and not in a good way. It's a completely different mentality. And I think that is something that goes across the whole bike world. You've got these little subcultures of motorcyclists. And I mean, the DGR pulls together a like my favorite kind of culture of motorcycles myself. But yeah, I do think there's always a slight element of fear, which is exhilarating, but also makes you feel alive and free and happy. And then you get the end of it and you're like, oh, that was, I enjoyed that ride with your friends or whatever. So,
I always describe it as it's using the road, but in a different dimension, because you can do this exactly the same journey that you've done in the car 1,000 times, but you do it on a bike and it's a completely different experience. And there is, I think, partly for that reason of you are extra alert, aren't you? You're constantly looking out for what other road users are doing. You're looking for oil or diesel or fluids on the road that might affect the grip through a corner. Or if you're out in the country, mud and animal poo that's often on the road. Yeah, it brings this whole new realm of using a road. And I've said this so many times, both on the podcast and both just socially, it's almost like going into a meditative state. You just, you focus on solely what needs to be focused on. And all those silly concerns or anxieties or issues that you might be thinking about that might be causing you stress at home, whether that's money or moving house or, oh no, the car's falling apart, family feuds, all of that just disappears just for a bit because you're focusing on only what needs to be focused on, and that's getting from the start to the end via whatever tangent and turn off you decide to take. And it's lovely. For me, it's absolute bliss. Yeah. It really is.
It's a weird way to put it, but you're essentially, you know, you're closer to death than you were when you didn't jump on the motorcycle. And it's the closest that you are effectively to death. And I think that says a lot about the mentality of motorcyclists when it comes to their end. And possibly, I guess for me, it's about limiting that risk. And Amy, you're talking about people that do it in between traffic. Like, I can understand the thrill of it, but for me, there's always a time and a place, and that is on a racetrack. Mm-hmm. And that's where I get my thrill, similar to how they get their thrill, but in a more professional environment, a safer environment. But I think it's a testament to motorcyclists as well that, you know, they don't have the cushion of 4 steel walls around them to protect them. And I think that is why you tend to find that sort of the motorcycle guys, as well as the guys that are in classic cars, that, you know, deep down they know that an accident in a fiberglass car or an old car is going to be potentially devastating. You tend to find that those people are more charitable and more willing to help people because they live on that edge. I don't know if I'm sort of getting the point across properly, but they're more at risk of dying, therefore they're more willing to support others, and they appreciate the value of life that little bit more than someone that doesn't take those risks.
I think you're spot on, and I think that is most noticeable within the motorcycling community worldwide. If you, and again, this is something I've paid reference to a few times before. If you drive along the road and you see a car that's on the side, let's think, you know, not in a vulnerable position. Let's say it's a country road. The car's pulled off and the bonnet's up. Chances are you'll look at that driver and go, ah, that's a shame. Like, but they'll be fine because they've got a car, and if they need to get shelter, they can sit in the car, or you know, somebody's going to come and help them. That's just automatically think that. With bikes, there's that, because of that extra element of you're so much more vulnerable. If it suddenly starts to rain, you've got no refuge. You're getting wet. You're just going to stand there in the rain and wait for your recovery or something to pull in. But I always find the bike community, you know, I've had this even riding around in London. I remember following a guy on a massive GS, and the poor bloke was probably in his mid-70s, and he just fell over on the road. Like, he got to the set of traffic lights and missed his footing and fell over. Immediately, four bikes pull up alongside, you know, help the guy up, get the bike up, and it's just like, put him back on his wheels. Are you okay? Yeah, a bit shaken up, that's fine. Maybe go and get a sweet cup of tea or something, and off you go. And it was just like, the minute everything was fine again and the guy was back on the bike, it was, everyone just went off on their own way, and it was just, that was just part of the day, you know. You didn't think twice about it. It was like, oh no, that guy needs some help, pull over, stop, da, da, da. That wouldn't necessarily happen with a car unless you saw somebody, you know, perhaps crying by the car and looking like they were in some sort of dismay. That community feel, and I think you hit the nail on the head there, Mark. I think it's because we've all work in that extra realm, that extra dimension of, we know just how bad this could get, or we know just how bad this could be. It does add that element of, well, let me just make sure you're okay at the very least. Let me just get you on your way, or get you resettled. It's funny. And another thing you said, actually, I want to pick up on as well, the whole death thing. It's a bad word for motorcycle PR, but a lot of people say it, and a lot of my car driving friends, because I, like you, Mark, I've got one, I could call Amy a friend, I guess, but I've got one.
I'm the good days.
I've got one friend out of my group of many friends that rides motorcycles, and that's my friend Joanna. Before I met Joanna, I had no bike friends at all, none. And the car friends all say to me, "Oh, I could never ride a bike because I'd be terrified, I'd kill myself." And my response is always, "That's the mentality that you want." Like, that, as crazy as it sounds, if you ride, you know, up until a year ago, I was riding around on fast bikes. I had a Panigale Ducati. And every single time, I'm not kidding, every single time I put on the helmet and sat on that bike, I considered and thought about what could go wrong, including loss of life. Every single time without fail. And I, you know, there will be some people that will call me out on this and say, oh, that's completely unnecessary, or that's, you know, overreaction. I believe that the day that you get on your bike and think, I'll be fine and nothing's going to go wrong, is the day that something really bad could happen. It's like the day that you go and decide to time yourself on a racetrack or see how quickly you can get from London to Birmingham. That's when things go wrong. It's the day that you turn off that sensible light.
If people disagree with you on that one, I mean, I agree with you 100%. And that's my mentality when riding. And I guess that's why people look at me as this figure in the sort of niche motorcycle world, and they expect that I'm going to be more supportive of them deciding to get their license.
Yeah.
There is not one person in my 11 years of riding that I have tried to motivate to get a motorcycle and ride personally. And in fact, every single time a friend of mine has said, hey, thinking about getting a motorcycle, they always expect me to be this supportive figure that's going to take them through the process. And I'm like, cool, that's a decision for you to make, all the best with it. And that's being the sort of person that I am. I, deep down, I know that you have to be a very specific personality to ride a motorcycle. Mm-hmm. You have to have your wits about yourself, and you have to have the attitude that, hey, at any point in this ride, something's going to go wrong, and I need to have the quickest reflexes, and I need to be ready to counter that.
Yep.
That's the attitude you need. So I agree with you there. The problem that I have is, deep down, I know that if I motivate someone to ride a motorcycle and I was personally involved in it, it wasn't through my event like for you, Amy, it was personally, if they have an accident, that's I know that I am going to feel, whether it's right or wrong, that is on me. And that was my fault because I was the one that motivated them to get a motorcycle. So it's probably not what motorcycle manufacturers want to hear. people in the scene saying to people, I don't want you to ride motorcycles. But the realistic part is there's always going to be an element to the sort of person that rides a motorcycle. It's not in a lot of places that we're talking about, that DGR takes place. It's not
your main form of transport. It's very different to when we're riding in India and when we're riding in Nepal and Vietnam. You know, maybe they don't have the mentality because they're so used to it, but when every second person that you're driving past is on their mobile phone and you can see that they're on their mobile phone, you have to assume the worst in every single part of that ride that you go on. So, you know what? I'm on team John for that one.
And I, and just to kind of throw a compliment back at you, I think that mentality of the fear that you getting somebody into motorcycling and then resulting in them getting hurt or worse, all that says to me is that you're just a really nice bloke. Like that, because I mean, you could have that mentality about everybody. If your friend had never had a beer before and you said, "Hey, try this beer for the first time," they turn into a raging alcoholic. Yeah, you can't put yourself through the worst case scenario of how bad everything could be. Have you ever climbed a ladder before? Well, don't, because you might fall off. You know that it just shows to me that you're a good bloke, and I think that's quite a common theme with the bike world. I remember a friend of mine, Tim, saying, if he ever wins the lottery, this is a bit of a tangent and often a bit of a whim, but if he ever won the lottery, the one thing he wouldn't do is buy any of his friends a fast car. Because, of course, as car guys, that's kind of what you envision, isn't it? If you came into, let's say, £1 million or a couple of $1 million, you think, oh, I'm going to go and buy my mate that 911 that he's always wanted or that Ferrari he's always wanted. But then he was thinking, well, if I bought my friend that 911 turbo he's always wanted and he lost control of it and put himself into a tree, then he'd live with the guilt forever. And I was like, you can't live with that mentality. It just shows that you're quite a compassionate person.
Yeah, I mean, and to be fair, to show you the asshole side of me, I've had that same scenario where it's like, if I win this much money, I'm going to buy my mate this car and all the rest of it, my best mate Philippe. But all I could come up with was a Ferrari that I paint pink and put a bull bar and tow bar on just to really piss him off.
Love that.
Yeah. I mean, that's best friends for you, right?
Yeah, and you know, if we want to slow him down, we can just load up the trailer with, I don't know, concrete and just get the power to weight ratio to that of a, an old school car. It's so funny right then, isn't it? Like, I want to be a smart ass and say, pick a specific motorbike that's slower, a specific car that's slow. And then I'm sitting there going, oh, but actually from a sponsorship perspective, I better not talk bad about anyone.
The PR machine's always worrying. Oh, it's
just... I just want to be free.
But I mean, I have to say, now going back round to your sponsors, you've got you've got Triumph sponsoring this year. Have they sponsored a number of years now, the DGR?
Yeah, so Triumph have actually been on board since our third year. So we had year number one, which was just breaking stereotypes. Year number two, where we started the charity stuff. And then year number three, they were on board. So this is their 8th event.
Awesome.
And now we're sort of just locking down what the next 3 years looks like. So I'm fairly confident that it will be Triumph on board again. I mean, for us, we feel that Triumph are the right brand for that style of event. Mm. And to be fair, the amount of support that we've gotten from their dealerships, from the teams in all the different places around the world, it helps us run a safer event. And I don't know, I feel a bit weird because the meeting that I had before catching up with you guys was actually with Triumph. And I just felt weird thinking, wow, we've been with these guys for 8 years. That's a long sponsorship deal. And when I first started DGR, I sort of sat there and thought, oh yeah, this is a cool idea. It might last, 10 years or so. Mm. And, we're now at year 10. We're now at the 10th event. So yeah, fingers crossed we get them back on board.
That's awesome. Yeah, because I'm going to ride one of their bobbers. I've never ridden a bobber before. So
They're beautiful though, aren't they? Yeah.
In terms of visually, I think
we saw one at, we did a podcast back in the summer with Maria Costello, very famous motorcycle rider.
She is amazing.
She is indeed.
I love Maria Costello. Yeah, we went riding motorbikes with her when she was here in Sydney. She's awesome.
Amazing. But yeah, Maria turned up to our podcast recording on a bobber.
She did, yes.
Very cool looking thing.
She was one of our ambassadors probably about 3 or 4 years ago. And I mean, I don't know if Amy's let the cat out of the bag now, but Amy is actually one of our ambassadors this year as well.
We kept that one quiet until 50 minutes into our conversation.
I didn't want to go and be like, oh, by the way, I'm one of their global ambassadors.
Oh, by the way, this is a completely biased podcast.
wondered why you were so keen to get Mark on.
So let's get Mark on, yeah.
Yeah, no, we've got some fantastic ambassadors this year, and I think it's a testament to, well, the guys and girls that take part in the event. You know, last year we had 5 males, 5 females. This year we've got 5 males, 5 females. And I don't know, it's just, it's so awesome for me to be able to see, I guess, the evolution of the people that are getting into this event over the last 10 years. And to be completely honest and transparent, in the first year, there was probably like 3 or 4 girls globally. And now it's starting to get to that sort of 15-20% mark. So, you know, having Amy on board as well, one, you know, the fact that you're an amazing photographer, two, the fact that you're an amazing individual, and as weird as this is going to sound, three, the fact that you're female is actually really nice for us to sort of showcase to everyone that, hey, this isn't a folks game, this isn't everyone's game.
Yeah,
absolutely, absolutely. I've always been, you know, for me, I guess, I don't know if it's, my upbringing was always very, it was just a flat plane across everything. Even from, I remember being a toddler and my mum, you know, talking me through the birds and bees and explaining about races and sexuality and this, that, the other. And it was always just, as a child, everybody was equal. Didn't matter if you were gay, straight, bi, whatever you want to identify as, what colour your skin was, what your interest was. And it wasn't until, you know, growing up and becoming an adult, going through school, realising that these other sort of prejudices and things exist. And for me, the most disappointing thing is always learning that there are people out there, whether you're a guy or a girl or however you want to identify, and think that something in this world is exclusive to you because of who you are. And I remember getting to that point of my childhood and discovering that there were people out there that thought, oh, I can't do that because I am, insert whatever you want to be there. And you know, we've had this conversation recently, Amy and I, where we spoke about certain manufacturers on their websites, you know, putting up images, you know, that think of the typical, we'll market our motorbikes with the cool guy riding through the desert and wearing the cool Bellstaff jacket and all this, that and the other. And the vast majority was all just blokes. And it's never made any sense to me. Like, at no point throughout the design process of a motorcycle or the evolution process of a motorcycle has it been, this is for guys only, this is for blokes, this is not for girls. And, you know, I still stand by that now. There's nothing in the world of both motorsport or motorcycling or sports cars or anything like that that to me says this should be for men. Oh, and girls can have a go too. Like, it's just, it's bizarre. So I'd like to think that there will be girls listening that, you know, perhaps have been thinking, oh, maybe I should do that, but it is a man's world. It's not a man's world at all. Yes, no, there are lots of blokes that do it, but there are also a lot of girls that do it as well.
Yeah, and I mean, I've got to be careful how I say things, obviously. I don't want you guys to have to edit this whole thing. but the beautiful thing about motorcycles is let's look at women and men, right? It's, okay, running. Yes, men are physically built different. Uh-huh. Swimming. Different sports, rugby league, rugby union. Okay. Yes, there are differences, but when you look at motorcycling, it's all mental.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
There is literally the size of your body, the size, what hair, how long your hair is, the bits and pieces that you have are irrelevant on a motorcycle, because when you're on a motorcycle, it's the most gender neutral thing you can possibly do, in my opinion.
Yep.
Your body says go left, you go left. Your body says go right, you go right. So irrespective of what gender you are, the motorcycle does what your mind tells it to do. And that's why I've always liked the idea of motorcycles and the idea of having more and more women join the motorcycling world. And yeah, I get that, you know, maybe, more women have got their heads screwed on in a more safer manner than us guys. I get that.
Yeah.
But again, as dangerous as it is, you can do it safely if you're, you know, just prepared to practice and prepared to be aware of your surrounding. And yeah, I love the fact that when it even comes to racing and seeing Maria Castillo race at like Goodwood and that stuff, like we're here in the office watching her just blown away by her achievements, thinking as guys, damn, we wish we could ride as good as her.
Absolutely. I mean, on the podcast when she came on, she planted a bit of a seed about potentially getting some sort of track day organized. And because I do a lot of car track days, every free day that I have I'm on car track days. I have a dedicated track day car exactly for that purpose. I have never ridden a bike on track.
Neither have I.
Never done the track down a bike.
It's the best. I know. It's the best. And Maria, it's so much fun.
In our podcast, Maria was like, right, I'll sort the day and I'll give you tuition on the day. And to me, like, it doesn't, there's no, I guess that maybe there are people out there that think, oh, yeah, getting taught to ride by a girl, that's a bit weird. To me, it doesn't, it literally doesn't make any difference at all. I look at Maria Costello as a fast as hell rider. You know, she has previously set lap records on the TT. She's incredible. Like, to me, it's just this amazing ability. And as you say, it doesn't matter what's between your legs. If you're good at doing something and you can teach somebody else, then, and you've got the opportunity to learn from them, then go for it. It's
at the end of the day, we all know that there is a shitload of insecure motorcyclists, male motorcyclists out there. And it is what it is. And, you know, sometimes it feels like it's to a degree generational. And, you know, I think every decade it does shift, and every passing generation, you know, as younger people, we're more accepting of the right for homosexuals to get married. We're more accepting from the gender neutral front. There's less racism. I think that, you know, as long as we're sort of compassionate, and I think the issue is that people forget that they just need to treat people how they want to be treated. Because if everyone lived by that motto, you wouldn't have all this nonsense. Like, I don't care if a girl teaches me how to do something as long as I learn. Like, it doesn't matter what the gender is. Anyway, we are getting better at it. And I mean, there's no doubt that, you know, even personally, I'm getting better at making sure that I don't say things inappropriate, but you know, I still stuff up every now and then when it comes to genders as well, and when it comes to certain things. But as long as we're all working that little bit harder to make sure that we're, you know, being more accepting, like, you know, the intention's not negative. It's just sometimes we say stupid shit that we don't mean.
That's right. No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And the ability to be able to hold up our hands and go, ah, do you know what? Actually, that wasn't fair. Or I probably shouldn't have said that. I do that a lot.
That's me on a daily basis. I just walk around with my arms up everywhere.
Sorry.
Yeah. People are like, I'm not trying to rob you. I'm like, oh, no, it's not that.
Oh, I love it. This has turned into a bit of a feel-good podcast, this one, because we've gone from motorcycles to just fucking be nice to everyone, please. Be nice to each other.
Yeah, I'd love to repeat one of the words that Anthony Partridge uses a lot, but I'm not going to. Just don't be a... That's all. That's
you can
all
say
I
it and I'll beep it. I'll beep it in the edit. Go on,
no, I don't even want to say it. I want to have this noted that I did not say the word that every typical Australian says and that Anthony says every second word.
Well, I don't know if we should kind of call this a day before John has to end up beeping out most of the end of this podcast.
It's just a 60-minute beep, and people are trying to do Morse code to try and figure out.
Well, it's funny you mentioned Anthony's name, because I don't know if you're aware, but we had to record Ant's podcast 3 times.
Oh, wow.
We started. Oh, no. We hit the record button. We hit the record button for Ant's podcast 3 times, and in 2 different locations. That's how bad it was.
Anthony is probably he is my best sort of motorcycle buddy that I've made through motorcycling. So him and I are very close, and we've had some pretty crazy times test riding motorbikes all around the world and partying at different motorcycle events around the world. But he is one very, very loose unit.
If you look back on our episode list, you'll see that the episode is titled Third Time Lucky with Ant Partridge.
Oh, that's funny. I thought it was just going to be titled C-*P.
Skull and crossbones, exclamation mark.
No, that was awesome. Thanks so much for having me, guys. I really enjoyed that.
No, it's been great. Let's throw those websites out once again, because if anyone's interested in either the ride or the drive, go for it, Mark.
Yeah, gentlemansdrive.com for everything car related. Obviously, social media is at gentlemansdrive, and for classic motorcycles, gentlemansride.com and the relevant social media tags. It's all there. This year, we've got 4 fantastic Triumph motorcycles that we're giving away to our highest fundraisers. So if you wish to be a part of it and support Movember, then please jump online and join us. Fantastic. 23rd of May.
Thank you.
Or
so
the 26th of September. Choose.
We definitely know that date. Cool.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, you've made it to the end of the episode. That means you are amazing, because anyone that makes it to the end of a podcast is the best person in the world. Congratulations. Just wanted to remind you, as we said in the opening of this episode, drop us an email. We have the email address podcast@drivenchat.com. If you would love to give us a story about classic car wins or loses, or any hero stories or tragedy stories, we want to hear them. And as Andy pointed out, we will dedicate an episode to you, to your letters, and to your stories. A massive thank you to Mark Howard for being our headline superstar guest in this week's episode. Our thanks to Amy Shaw for being a fabulous host as ever. Promise we will be bringing you more of Amy in the next few weeks. It's been a bit me-focused, really, in the past few weeks, so more Amy the better. And yes, keep the feedback coming as well. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I cannot say enough thank yous to everybody that is leaving feedback for us, leaving 5-star ratings, clicking subscribe on Spotify. I can see it happening, and it makes a huge, huge difference to us. We never, ever, and as far as I am concerned, we will never ask you for any form of Patreon subscriptions or money. Yeah, we want to keep doing this for free, as we have been doing, and for the sole premise of bringing you some great entertainment. So if there is any way that you want to kind of pay your gratitude to us, then a lovely, kind, positive review, a subscribe, a follow, a share with a friend, that is the way to do it, because it really does make a huge, huge difference to us. So thank you, thank you, thank you once again. I'll give you that email address one last time, and then I'll let you go on your merry way. It is podcast@drivenchat.com. That's podcast@drivenchat.com. And as I pointed out a few weeks ago, that email address, it goes straight to me. It goes straight to me, straight to my phone, straight to my laptop. So by all means, blow it up with spam. Don't actually blow up with spam. Just good podcast-worthy emails, please. Thanks. See you next week. Bye.
Hey, folks. I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Oh, wow, you've made it to the end, the very end. And it's John Markar here again, reminding you that this podcast, the Driven Chat podcast, has now run its course and has come to an end. To find a new format, search the Driven podcast in your preferred podcast app, or head on over to the website driven.site to find some quick and easy links through to the new episodes in the new formats on your preferred apps. Thanks. Bye.